Coming up on today's show...
I had a fan of mine who is friends with them, Mick Fleetwood and Steven Tyler. He lived on Maui, and he invited me to come play at Fleetwood's on Main Street, which is sadly now burned down.
You tell me that you don't think I know who I am. Who do you think that you are?
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on location at the NAMM Show in Anaheim, California, my guest is a singer, songwriter, and piano player who had a big year with releases in 2024, putting out an album last May, five singles, a Christmas song, and was featured on songs released by two other artists. She has worked with Grammy Award-winning producers and artists, and one of the songs from her album last year was placed on an episode of Children Ruin Everything on the CW Network. Additionally, she had a song selected as a finalist in the International Songwriting Competition, plus she has gained recognition from legendary rockers such as Mick Fleetwood and Steven Tyler. In 2022, a live video of her performing went viral on TikTok, hitting 4.5 million views and boosting her online presence. You've been hearing a song of hers called Living for Myself. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Lola Christine.
Hello, Bruce. Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you so much for stepping away from all the hubbub that is the NAMM Show and sitting down in here with me. Let's get started by having you share first with the audience all about the song of yours that was just playing called Living for Myself.
Yes. So, you know, being at NAMM here, it's kind of the perfect setting to explain this. NAMM is amazing, and there's a lot of, you know, people here who are telling you about, like, what you need to do to fit into the music industry or what you need to do to have success and all of that. And so I actually had a meeting, this was several years ago, with this fellow who was a manager, music manager, and I met with him in hopes that he would guide me into fame, you know. And we met up, and he was like, I just feel like you're doing too many things, like you have too many different musical influences in what you're writing, mm-hmm. and you just need to pick one and just do that one thing well. And, like, you know, I was at the time thinking, well, he's more powerful than me. He's higher up than me, whatever. And so I was like, okay, yeah, you're probably right. But then as I drove home from that meeting, I was like, why do I always give my power away to people that I perceive as, like, above me in the industry? And, like, instantly doubt myself, instantly forget, like, my values, like, what makes me unique as an artist.
And I didn't know that we were going to cry in this episode. Gosh, you're tugging at my heartstrings here. But I feel you, though. I mean, that's important that people hear this. This is a great lesson. Please continue.
Yeah. So what makes me unique, I feel, in my songwriting is all of the amazing musical influences that I've had over the years. You know, pop, jazz, R&B, gospel, Americana, all of that goes into how I hear music, how I write, how I form lyrical, melodic phrases and all of that. And so I came home and I sat down at the piano and I started writing the first lyrics of this Living for Myself. You tell me that you don't think I know who I am. Well, who do you think you are? Wow. I am a canvas of many colors. You can't define me just by one.
Wow.
And so the song just, like, boom, flew out of me. And then it ended up really, as many of my songs are, being a much deeper reflection on myself and just kind of all the areas in my life that I tend to give my power away.
So then let's transition with that, because that song is off your album released last May called Chapters. Tell us all about that project. You live here in California, Laguna Beach specifically. Where was the album recorded? Did you write the 12 songs specifically to arrive at that release, or were some of these songs hanging around for a while, or maybe did you have, say, 25 songs and whittled it down to 12? Just roll up your sleeves here to tell us about the Chapters album.
Yes, it was quite a work in progress. Many years. I originally was thinking I would make this like love song compilation album, because I've written so many love songs like since the beginning of my songwriting history. And I was like, I should just put them all on an album, like plop them all together and just have a big old record of love songs. And I started talking to different producers about this concept, and they were like, they're all good songs, but it doesn't tell a story. Like, there's no storyline. It's just like love song, you know? And so I kept getting that feedback of like, you need to tell a story. And so then I started kind of like thinking of how the songs that I currently had could fit into a storyline. And then new songs started coming almost to fill in the blanks of that bigger thematic message that I wanted to convey with the record. And so there were about 30 songs, I'd say, that I originally was kind of like choosing from with this love song concept, and then it narrowed down significantly, and then I wrote new stuff too for kind of that final presentation.
So where do you record? And then did you do this all on your own? Was it, there's a studio, there's a producer, he brought in outside musicians? What did all that look
like? It was quite a hodgepodge because, as I was saying before, I had been talking to a lot of other producers because I, at the time, didn't feel capable of producing the record myself. I had never done that before. But some really good friends of mine in the industry were like, Lola, you know what you want. You have like the ear for it. You just have to figure out how to make it happen.
So I want to jump in here because I'm looking at it right here on my screen. The album is called Chapters. There's 12 songs on it, and none of them are titled Chapters. So was that kind of your way of expressing to the audience that, like you said, this is going to tell a story as you go through chapter one, chapter two, chapter three?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there are 5 chapters to the record, which if you look on, you know, my Spotify and whatnot, you can see them broken down along with on the vinyl.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because I kind of, you know, wanted to make it really clear, like what each section, because the chapters are like 2 to 3 songs each.
I remember back in the day, ELO, Electric Light Orchestra, they put out a double studio album, and one of the sides of one of the two albums was called Concerto for a Rainy Day. So just those songs on that one side of the two albums. So I love this Chapters concept. Let's get back to, did you bring in outside musicians? Where did you record?
Yeah, so once I made the decision to do it myself, I had my friend Justin Bush, who's like, he does a lot of sync music and has quite the call list for amazing musicians in Nashville. And so the first few tracks of the record, we used his guys in Nashville, and they would just record in their home studios, send it to me, and then I would go and kind of pick my favorite takes and whatnot. And then for other songs, I used my band here in California. And then for one of the songs, actually Living for Myself, we went into a studio and recorded that live in the studio.
In Laguna Beach, in Los Angeles? Where was that?
In L.A.
Okay.
Yeah, because I really wanted that song particularly to have like a really big live feel.
See, I like that because that tells me that you did have a vision for what you wanted. And so I want to get back to something else you started to talk about, because coincidentally, last week on the show, Ashton Barbary told us about self-producing her latest album after having had someone else in that role for her debut EP and then her first album. And so let's resurrect the conversation about you stepping into the producer role, because as I just said, you obviously had a vision, being that you said, well, for this song, this is what I want to do with it. So just talk more about taking on, I'm self-producing.
Yeah, I definitely had to get over my imposter syndrome there because it felt like way too big of a role for me to play, and one that I had never done, especially for a full-length record. But I had, like really great people cheering me on and guiding me and helping, you know, like watch this YouTube video, watch this and listen to this podcast. And so I started getting really nerdy into production and then listening to music differently and then just spending hours and hours and hours on Logic messing around.
And I was going to ask you what software.
Logic. Yeah. I like that one.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but audience, if you didn't hear it, go back and listen to my interview with Ashton Barbary from last week. One of the things that she said made her feel comfortable stepping into the producer role was the experience of, I'm holding up air quotes, audience, of just being the artist on the first two. So watching what the producer does and knowing kind of what all goes into that and what's expected in the studio and dealing with musicians that are brought in for one or more songs. Do you feel that you drew upon that and said, well, I mean, I do kind of know what a producer does. I've just never been the producer.
Yes, totally. And on my album Before Chapters that I released, that one, I was able to work very closely with my producer. So I was watching him all the time of like, why is he doing that? And I would ask him sometimes like, what's that button do? And why are you using that plugin? And
but I'm curious, because when your name is on it as the artist, someone else might be the producer, but at the end of the day, I would argue that you're still the boss. And so on a previous record, you could have had a song where the producer says, let's try this. And in your heart, you go, I'm not sure, but he knows he's a producer.
Uh-huh.
And so you try it. But I still think that you're the one paying for it. And you could say, I don't like it. I'm glad we tried it, but yeah, we're going to pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That definitely happened. Not so much on my first album I ever did, because I was in, total new beginner phase. And so I was like, yeah, you guys make all the decisions.
Exactly.
I don't know what I want.
You're green and you feel like, well, they must know everything.
Yeah.
Because that's where you do start putting that, you know, they're smarter than me. They're more successful than me. They're higher up than me.
Totally. Even though things didn't feel right to me, you know, I just wouldn't speak up.
Yeah.
But then on the next record, I was able to work with this fabulous producer who wanted me to be involved.
Mm.
So he was always like asking me for feedback and like really deeply concerned that I loved the music.
That's
yeah.
so great to hear. That's
yeah,
so great
he
to
was
hear.
Game changer for me, because he was the one who said, no, Lola, you can produce your next record. Like you pretty much did this one with me. So go do it on your own.
And I want to commend whoever that is, because it would be very easy to think that but not speak it, because you don't want to lose the business and say,
right,
I want the producer credit, I want the producer pay.
Uh-huh.
So I want to commend whoever that person was.
Yeah, Tom Kendall Hughes.
Way to go, Tom.
Yeah.
I need to get on the ball with booking travel for some upcoming trips so I can pass along those details, new information to you. So in the meantime, what is actually the end of this month, Windy City, I'm coming your way. I will be in Chicago for Podcast Movement Evolutions, which starts on March 31st. And although it ends on April 3rd, I don't see myself still being there then, because April 3rd to the 5th is the Las Vegas Writers Conference, and yours truly is one of the speakers for that event. If you are, or someone you know is, a writer of literature, books, poems, whatever, visit LasVegasWritersConference.com for details on that event, including registration information. I would love to see you there. In terms of those other places I will be, keep up with the weekly e-newsletter as well as Instagram for when I announce additional locations and dates. I'm saying all this because I would love to meet you and say a personal face-to-face thank you for listening to Now Hear This Entertainment. If you do, in fact, see an opportunity for our paths to cross, write to me through podcast@nhte.net or DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Lola, I want to hear more about the Chapters album and specifically more about this story behind the record and the songs.
Yes. So the theme of the record still is around love, but more of the journey that I feel I've taken through the rose-colored glasses, falling in love, fantasy, kind of like looking past all red flags, that type of love. And then getting my heart broken, which is chapter 2, when things fall apart. And chapter 3 is called Into the Woods. And that's where I had to really come
self-discovery
home to myself. Yeah. Yeah. And return to the wilderness of my
soul. See what a great storyteller you are. Even just conversationally, I sensed that's what it was going to be, where you're going. Please continue.
Yeah, and reclaiming my power, living for myself. And then chapter 4 is a new dance, which was going back out into the dating world, but from a more grounded place in myself and not this enmeshment codependency. And then chapter 5 is called Parasamgata, which is a word I learned in Zen Buddhism that means basically like from one shore to the next, passing from one to another and making it to the other side. And it's kind of the spiritual cap on the record of that. It's like you will find that the emptiness within you is still there until you have a deeper sense of grounding with source, with the divine, or whatever you want to call it, with God, the universe. And even if I had that more healthy relationship, it still ultimately wasn't satisfying me until I rooted down into my faith more. And so the final two songs on the record are about my relationship with God, and we'll get more into the final song at the end, because that's the one we're going to play.
But see, I like that you just took us on that song-by-song journey through the album, because it sounds like you did learn the lesson when you went to people and said, I have all these love songs, I'm going to make a love song album. And they're like, yeah, that's not really anything that's going to hold the audience's attention, because it's kind of like in the world of filmmaking. I have a close friend who made a documentary 7 or 8 years ago called The Messengers, which is a podcast documentary. And it was basically to inform people, this is what podcasting is. There are podcasters whose own families in 2017 didn't even know what it was. And what he learned on the way of making this documentary is it was just all rose-colored glasses. It was all celebrating, yay, isn't podcasting fun? And somebody told him, you have to have some element of conflict in there. So what you just described for us is going from this emotion to this one, back to this one, leveling out, etc., instead of just keeping the status quo and putting out an album that has 10, 11, 12 songs that are all just, yay, let's all hold hands and kumbaya and we are the world. And, you know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with love songs, but I think you got some real good advice from the people who I think had your best interest at heart and weren't puffing their chest out and going, listen to me, young lady. I know all the answers to the music business.
Yes.
Don't do 12 love songs.
Yeah, no, it was...
Thank you for letting me get on my soapbox, by the way. Or maybe it's just a TED Talk. Maybe it's not necessarily a soapbox.
No, it's so true that the conflict is a necessary part of the whole experience, the whole journey.
It holds our attention.
Yeah.
Whether we're listening to the Chapters album. Yeah, or whether we're watching a Netflix series, or whether we're watching the Messengers documentary. There's got to be something that doesn't make us go, okay, where is this going?
Right.
You know, so with yours, it's like, well, stick around for the next song, because wait till you see what happens next. And stick around for the song after that, because wait until you see which way I turn then.
Yeah.
Nicely done. Nicely done.
Thank you.
I have to say that I'm really surprised at how week after week, month after month, guest after guest on the show have come on talking about their new album being available on vinyl. I almost feel like we cannot say vinyl is really starting to see a resurgence anymore, because it has borderline become the norm. Tell us about your decision to release Chapters on vinyl?
It was a difficult decision. My co-producer, Justin Bush, from the beginning was like, Lola, you gotta do a vinyl. And I was like, yeah, we'll see about that. Because I knew it was expensive. And as we were kind of getting to the end of all the recording, and he's like, you should probably get on that vinyl because it's going to take a while. And I was just dragging my feet like, I don't know, man. Like, it's just such an investment. And, you know, like I said, I had so many songs for this record. I decided to record two more songs. And then I was like, what if these were bonus tracks only available on vinyl?
I love it. I love it.
To make it kind of like this extra special, like, you know, make people feel like they're really getting like the insider view of the whole record and all this bonus material. So that was kind of like the deciding factor of like, okay, I did these two bonus tracks. What else am I going to do with them except release them on vinyl? And then we worked it all out with a buddy of his in Nashville who actually does the lacquering and plating himself.
Wow.
And
wow.
Yeah, he's like very into it, like ultra vinyl nerd.
But I'm curious because it sounded to me like you spent a lot of time thinking about the cost involved and then also this idea of, you know, what's really going to move people. Okay, we'll do these bonus songs, but because you talked before about throwing yourself into the research of YouTube videos and everything else when it comes to producing, did you dive into, let me see, despite Bruce on his podcast talking about everybody's doing vinyl nowadays, did you throw yourself into, like, is there really the demand for vinyl that people are saying there is?
I didn't really research in that way at all.
But did that even just come across your mind, though, of come on, how much?
Yeah, I did question, like, if anyone would actually buy it, because with the length of the record, I knew I had to do a double.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would make it more expensive to buy for my, you know, customers, too. And so that was, like, a big dilemma for me. Of just knowing, like, I don't know if anyone's going to pay that much for a double album. And I was pretty hesitant. And just, like, having them physically in my house, you know, like boxes of vinyl. I'm like, what am I going to do with all this? These were my hesitations for sure. But then Justin, he talked to me about how special it is for someone to have a physical form of your music.
Yeah.
And how unique that is. And it makes them feel way more connected to the whole album instead of just like going on Spotify and listening to one song.
Yeah.
They're going to listen to the whole record.
You know, I don't know if you're aware of this, but it's not as easy as people would think in 2025 to find out credits for one song. And I've had to go on the world's largest search engine. I don't say the actual G word because then my phone lights up thinking I'm about to ask it something. But I've tried to go on the world's largest search engine to look up credits for one song, and it's not easy to do. So, again, when you have the physical album, you can pull out the liner notes and go, look at all this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, and see cool artwork and all that kind of thing.
And the lyrics.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, totally, totally. When you were describing at the start of the show, you did a great job of painting the picture for us of, you said, I was driving home from this, you know, talking to this guy, and that's when you got the idea of the song Living for Myself. I'm interested in hearing about your songwriting process to include whether or not you co-write, because I feel like Laguna Beach might not necessarily be a hotbed for a songwriting community. Sorry. Do you just do solo writes? And then if so, what does that typically look like?
I do mostly solo writing. There's two songs on Chapters that I co-wrote with Justin Bush, who's my co-producer for the record. And, yeah, both of those songs, we weren't thinking they'd be on this record because they were written a bit before any of this was kind of coming into life. And then they just fit perfectly. I was like, oh, okay. Wow, that worked out. But my solo writing process, it's always been my form of therapy.
Mm.
And it's like when I feel like there's something stuck in me, it's usually that I need to write a song, and I'll sit down and I usually start playing piano first, just mm-hmm. kind of noodling around maybe like a little chord progression or a melodic line or something will come. And then I'll turn on my recorder device, my voice memo, and then just start making stuff up, you know, singing whatever comes through. And it just kind of like drops in
wow.
this theme or like this hook. And then I go with it. I flow with it. And I always feel like I'm, at least for the first verse and chorus, when I'm in my flow zone, I don't feel like I'm writing.
Mm.
I feel like something else is writing through me. And it's just, I'm like, okay. Channeling.
Yeah, I'm just the vessel. Go ahead and...
Yeah. And then the second verse is where it gets a little harder, and it's like the puzzle of mm. like, okay, like creative source gave you this starting piece. Now, how can you keep telling this story? And it's like this exciting feeling of filling in the blanks and like...
So are you someone that in that moment, you'll put pressure on yourself to say, well, I got to sit here and finish it? Or is it, no, once I kind of get where I'm going and stop the voice recorder, and I'll come back to it a day or a week later?
I find that if I walk away at verse two, I will not finish the song. So
wow.
I kind of have to
wow.
dedicate myself to...
So you're that disciplined that if the phone is ringing or if the doorbell, nope, I'm in a zone here. Don't interrupt
yeah.
me.
Yeah, or if I have to go to a gig, I'll be like voice memoing on the drive and like.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's good commitment though. And I get it because like you say, that inspiration, you're all filled up with it until all of a sudden just go and scene and you stop like, wait a minute, what just happened?
Right.
We were on a roll here.
Yeah.
And it's hard to, I guess, kind of recreate that moment a week later.
Exactly.
And get back into, you know, the energy that you had built up, that you're playing, you're feeling good, it's all coming to you. And then you go, all right, I guess I'm resuming next week, Friday.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because there is like a resistance that comes up of like, this is hard. This is because
maybe I should stop.
Yeah, like, yeah. Oh, it's just not coming as easily as verse one did. And I would like get frustrated and it makes me want to give up. But that's like the moment where I feel the creative source is testing you. Like, how bad do you want this?
Are you
willing to overcome the discomfort?
I like it.
And keep climbing the steeper mountain here to get to the top. You know?
Yeah, that's a great teaching moment for any of you out there who are up-and-coming songwriters. She's giving you pearls, as Al Pacino said in Scent of a Woman. Good lessons here from Lola Christine. I am joined today on location at the NAMM Show in Anaheim, California, by singer, songwriter, piano player Lola Christine. Visit her official website at musicoflola.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Her album called Chapters, as you heard, is available on vinyl. Go into the music section of her website to get started on your way to ordering that. For those of you who just want to go digital, look for the logos on Lola's website for Apple Music and Spotify. Social media-wise, she is on YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok, so do please follow, subscribe, like, etc. Anaheim, Laguna Beach, San Juan Capistrano, Lola will be performing in those cities this and next month. Keep up with her online, including bands in town, for details on where and when you can go see her perform live. If you have been listening, say, at least since January 1st, you've heard me mentioning having been in San Francisco last month, going to Las Vegas at the start of April. In mid-January, I was in Orlando. All of these are places where events were held or are being held, with yours truly being a speaker. There are at least two more that I know of, but haven't announced yet. plus something like three others that I'm waiting to hear back from. If you are or someone you know is interested in having me come be a part of your event, I strongly recommend that you or they visit speakerbrucew.com. It's an entire website devoted to all the speaking that I do. There's a video on there, a list of locations and events I've spoken at, and more. Plus, of course, an opportunity to contact me. Again, check out speakerbrucew.com. Lola, before all that, you were talking about your songwriting process. A popular phrase in 2025 is creative process. How do you define that different from songwriting, and what does your creative process consist of? What does that look like?
That's a good question. Creative process. I guess I see that as a wider encompassing term beyond just the songwriting, but to the production aspect and kind of like more of the visualization of how this whole song is going to come together. Maybe there's a music video. Mm. Maybe there's some, you know, album artwork that I start seeing within that, you know.
Yeah, what can I do in my live show that's creative? And granted, you're sitting behind a piano, but still, there can still be creative elements.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But again, I feel like a lot of my best inspiration is when I get out of my own way and I stop trying to be either like someone else or be what I think people might like, what I think will get more, you know,
more views, more downloads, more likes, more fun.
Yes, exactly. And so anytime I'm in that headspace, it's like, it never feels truly authentic. And so the creative process is really about me dropping into a deeper place in myself, a more receptive place of listening, clearing out all of that egoic need to like be someone that people like and needs validation, you know? And then if I'm listening, that's where the most beautiful ideas come from.
But you also strike me as someone who is a very visual person, meaning that you see a lot of things.
Yes.
Thought-wise.
I do. Yeah. Yeah, very visual. Especially in my meditations, the visuals are crazy.
But I like that you said, you know, not trying to be like somebody else, because there's that expression, just be yourself, because you know, everyone else has taken words to that effect. And so if you were so busy trying to be like someone else, someone comes to see you perform live and someone says, oh, you should go see her. It's a lot like so-and-so. Like, oh, well, then why don't I just go see that person?
Exactly.
Why would I go see Lola perform live?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I kind of like that about what I've created, because it is a bit hard to define like what genre I am and what other artist exactly I sound like, you know?
But I think you're also accepting the fact that you have license to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
That you can put yourself into whatever genre you feel, and the next album it could be a different genre, and you could play one live show one way and then 3 days later play another one completely different.
Yes, exactly. And I love that freedom.
So much of what we've talked about so far makes me wonder, when did you first fall in love with music?
Oh, when I was a little girl, very young, I loved dancing. Like I would make up really silly little dance routines, and that was my passion. And then my older brother started playing piano, taking piano lessons, and I was very intrigued and kind of jealous. So then I asked my parents if I could do piano lessons. And so I started taking lessons when I was 9. And then my piano teacher noticed as I was playing these like simple little Mary Had a Little Lamb melodies and whatnot that I would be humming along quietly. She's like, you seem like you really like to sing. Would you want to try singing in like the church choir or like try doing singing lessons? And And I was like, okay, I guess I'll give it a try. And I was very, very shy at the time, painfully quiet and shy. Mm. So the idea of singing was a little like, I don't know about that. But I was intrigued because she believed in me for some reason. And so we started working on my voice and just like discovered that I had this power in there. And so she decided to give me the big solo on Christmas Eve Mass at the Catholic Church of O Holy Night when I was 9 years old.
Wow.
And I will never forget that moment because I was like shaking, like so scared, so nervous, walking up to the microphone. And then once I started singing, it was like, I don't know, like I transcended. I blacked out in a way. And then this huge energy was just like moving through me. And everyone in the room felt it. And so after that experience, I was hooked. Mm. Like I just had to keep feeling that.
I want to get back into that zone.
Ah, that aliveness. Yeah.
That place that I went when I sang at Mass, how do I get back there?
Yeah.
You keep doing it. That's how you get back there.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. What a cool story. What a cool story. So there are going to be people who are just getting introduced to you for the first time listening to this episode. Describe for them then the history of your music career.
Yeah. So after that moment, I was all in for music, and my voice piano teacher actually worked with my brother and I to get us ready to be professional gigging musicians. And I was, you know, 10 at the time, he was 13, and we started singing people's weddings and doing funerals and like actually getting hired to do the church services and like special events at the church. And so we were like this little duo. And that was my first job at 10 years old, was being a wedding singer. And then by the time I was 15, I was writing a lot of my own music. And I was getting more proficient at the piano. And so I started my own band. And then we started, you know, playing around. Oh, by the way, I'm originally from St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh.
So this was all in St. Louis.
Okay.
So, yeah, I kind of had different bands throughout high school, and then I ended up going to college for music and studying at Webster University, and I got into jazz there, which I hadn't really listened to much jazz before that, but for some reason, the way I sang and wrote was pretty inspired by jazz. And so it was just kind of like in my bones for whatever reason. And then after graduating college, I continued gigging, you know, as a local musician in St. Louis and teaching, playing church, doing a lot of shows, and then having my own original music band. But I just had this calling in me to come out to California since I was pretty young. And it just kept getting stronger and stronger. And I kept getting signs from the universe, like, it's time, you got to do this.
Wow.
And so many things happened that were like, okay, I can't deny it anymore.
Yeah,
I have to make the leap. And I did that in 2017.
By yourself?
I was married at the time, actually.
Ah, okay.
And he was in my band as well. So
but
we,
you didn't know anybody here, did you?
No,
you
just, not really. I knew like three musicians in the LA community.
You might as well know zero then.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we did the move and it was intense. It was really hard that first year. He basically told me I had to become famous within a year or else we weren't going to stay. So I was hustling like nobody's business, trying to, you know, network and get get as many gigs and everything I could possibly do. Songwriter nights, radio shows. And by the end of the year, I hadn't become famous.
I do want to jump in here, though, and say, audience, if you didn't hear my interview that I did last October when I was at the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival with Carlisle Griffin, that was episode 557, her story is very similar to Lola's, and her music is very similar to yours. And so a lot of what you're describing sounds like a story that I've heard before. And like I say, your music is wonderful.
Ooh,
your music is great.
And I want to check her out.
And so, audience, please make sure that you look for the Chapters album, that you look for all of Lola's music. But that's what it's making me think of. But I'm glad that you told us that story, especially the part about originally being from St. Louis, because we do hear a lot of people that up and make the move to L.A., to Nashville, to New York, to wherever, and don't know anybody, you know, or they know three people, and you go, wow, that climb that you talked about before is all of a sudden all the more steeper.
Yes. Oh, yes. And
whether you have somebody putting a deadline on you or not, it's steep.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a tense year, but, you know, I felt like I was making strides in my career, and it wasn't enough for him. And so I had to make the decision of, like, do I want to save this relationship or keep following my dreams? And I decided to keep following my dreams, you know, and it was really hard.
Yeah,
so
God bless you, because to have that dilemma in front of you is difficult enough regardless of where you are, but to have it going on at a time when it's like, I completely moved my life to a totally different part of the country, that makes it even tougher. So God bless you that you persevered, but that you also said, I'm not just going to kowtow to somebody who's giving me orders. I'm going to follow my heart that led me out here in the first place.
Yes.
I saw these signs that I was meant to come here.
Yes.
So I'm going to continue with my dream, because clearly that's what I'm being called to.
Yes.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you. Away from the stage, away from the writing room, away from the recording studio, is the Lola Christine that does teaching and coaching.
Yeah.
Tell us about that role.
Oh, I've always loved teaching. I started doing that, probably when I was 18 years old. Basically, as soon as I felt like I had enough experience under my belt that I could...
I got something to say.
Yeah, drop some wisdom. And, I used to have a very large student base when I was in St. Louis. And then when I moved out here, I decided I wanted to be more selective with who I taught, because the students that I am fed by the most are the ones who are hungry to learn and they want to become artists.
You're teaching them piano, you're teaching them voice, you're teaching them the music business. What does this consist of?
Yeah, all of that. Okay. Voice, songwriting, piano, music business, marketing, a lot of mindset coaching.
This is all face-to-face, or you do people over Zoom?
Zoom,
oh,
yeah.
You do?
I'd say more over Zoom.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's, like, so beautiful, because all the students I work with pretty much are young female artists, or, like, they're trying to become artists and step into that. And I get to just nurture them and watch them grow. And it's so fun for me.
But if a 42-year-old male looked at all things Lola Christine online and said, I think she could probably help me, are you turning him away?
Oh, no. Okay. I would definitely work with him, too.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my other students is in his 70s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we released an album last year of his music.
So the music's getting louder where we are in the background. Tonight you're performing.
Yes.
Is this your first time at NAMM?
No, this is my third year.
Okay. But just talk about walking the show floor. Are there any brands that you're affiliated with? Are there people that you come here specifically to see? Is it a curiosity-seeking mission? What are you doing when you're getting immersed in the NAMM show?
I am sponsored by QSC Audio. They're awesome. And so that's who I've come with the past 3 years. But yeah, my first year that I was at NAMM, I have to say I was like so overwhelmed, you know, walking into the main convention hall and there's just drum solos going on while like someone's shredding this guitar solo and this guy's over here on the flute. Like, what is happening? And everywhere you go, it's just music like blasting. So I was like totally overstimulated the first time I came, but then I ended up finding a lot of joy going outside and watching the artists perform. Mm-hmm. And just the amount of talent here is insane.
You're playing where tonight?
At the Sheraton stage.
And it'll just be solo Lola Christine?
No, I'll have my band.
Ah.
Yeah, four piece.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Good for you. Good for you. What future plans do you have that you're comfortable revealing today?
Well, I'm working on a new album. Surprise, surprise, always.
Wow.
As I was finishing chapters, like the writing of chapters, the new music started coming in already for like the next project. And it's like inspirational, gospel-y, very uplifting, but also with this kind of theme of the highs and the lows, and knowing that to have the beautiful rose, you also have to have the sharp, pointy, painful thorns, right?
Wow.
And I've been in the writing process of that, and hopefully in the next few months, I'll be getting the band together, and I really want to record this one more live, like all together. Mm-hmm, now that I have my people here, like my core band is so strong, and it is like a dream getting to play with these guys. So I decided for this record, I just want to like track together in a studio.
Wow.
And have that energy just palpable on the record. Yeah, so that on the recording front, and then touring-wise, hopefully I would love to get some dates in Europe going soon.
Ooh, exciting.
And that's kind of like, I don't know, maybe next year, but yeah.
But this new album could conceivably be out in 2025?
Exactly,
wow.
Yeah, because if I'm tracking live, it'll be probably a lot quicker of a process.
Wow. I got to ask you before we start to wrap up here, Mick Fleetwood, Steven Tyler.
Yeah.
Do tell.
That was a whole Hawaii adventure. I had a fan of mine who is friends with them, Mick Fleetwood and Steven Tyler. He lived on Maui, and he invited me to come play at Fleetwood's on Main Street, which is sadly now burned down.
Mm.
But that was back in 2019, I believe, that I went out there and I got to play Fleetwood's. And Mick Fleetwood was not there, but he heard about it and then he listened to my music.
Wow, so
and
cool.
Gave me feedback
so
on
cool.
One of the, I had covered Dreams.
Mm.
And so he gave us all feedback on how we tracked it and whatnot. So that was really cool. And Steven Tyler, same, was kind of not physically present, but through my friend.
Listen to your music.
Yeah. He was taking videos and sending it to Steven Tyler.
Wow.
Which was pretty rad because those guys are like legends.
And this is where I have to jump in and say, if you want to hear some cool Aerosmith stories, I hope you know, audience, that any time that I refer to past episodes of this show, like I did with Carlisle Griffin, anytime I mention that during a guest interview, I'm always putting links to those interviews on the show page for that episode. So in the case of Lola Christine's episode, not only Carlisle Griffin, but I'm going to put a link to way back when I interviewed Buck Johnson, who is the keyboard player for Aerosmith, told some cool stories on that one. So go back and listen to my conversation with Buck. We're going to close today with another one of Lola's original songs, one called Other Side. Before I let you go, Lola, and we play that track, share with the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
This one's a fun story. So I had a dream one night that I woke up basically like where I was living, but it was like heaven. Like all the colors were so vibrant and
like What
magical.
Dreams May Come, if you've ever seen that movie with Robin Williams, What Dreams May Come.
Oh, okay. I don't
know
that one.
Oh my gosh, the colors in heaven are, wow, so lush and so, oh, please continue.
Yeah, it was gorgeous. And the feeling in my body was just total light, bliss, joy. And I, in my dream, was like, this is available all the time, but I just don't see it.
Wow. Wow.
And I woke up from the dream with this feeling of like, whoa, it is here. Because I could still feel the feeling of that heaven experience, even though I was awake. And so anyway, a couple days after I had that dream, I had a writing session with my buddy Justin Bush. And we sat down, and we, a lot of times, we're just kind of like vamping on chords and then see what happens. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't necessarily have a game plan with our writes. And so we were just vamping on this cool little progression. And he said, meet me on the other side as like the first lyric. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And so we went with that. And, the whole song started like kind of coming in, and I realized as we were writing, like, this song is like about the place I went in my dream.
Wow.
And I told Justin, like, whoa, we're writing about the dream I had the other night.
Wow.
Like, this is so cool. And so we kept going with that flow, and then we ended up doing a music video for the song that was like conveying kind of that feeling of, you can bring that feeling of heaven with you wherever you go.
It's available.
You know,
yeah.
And that blissful freedom, even into the dark places, you can still carry that light.
So cool. Wow.
Yeah.
You have been really blessed with a lot of transcendent moments, as you just described there. And I think that's part of the gift that you've been given, right? The gift musically, songwriting, singing, playing piano, is that you are also given these divine moments that, to your credit, you are conscious of seizing and using for your art.
Yes, it feels like, I feel like very sought after by the Spirit, that God keeps calling me with these kind of mystical, far-out experiences of, like, there's something more, there's something more. Pay attention and share this light with others.
Yeah, I've blessed you with these talents. I've called you out to California for a reason. Get to work.
Yeah, yeah. Don't forget who you really are, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Good for you for answering the call. Wonderful to meet you. Thank you so much for coming by and being on Now Hear This Entertainment. This was a blast.
Thank you so much for having me, Bruce. There were a lot of good emotional moments for me on this, so thank
Wonderful.
You for all your reflections.
Yeah, yeah. What a joy. What
yeah.
a joy. Audience, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, piano player Lola Christine. Do visit her official website at musicoflola.com. As I said before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You heard her talk all about her album called Chapters. As we discussed, it is available on vinyl. Go into the music section of her website to get started on your way to ordering that. For those of you who just want to go digital, look for the logos on Lola's website for Apple Music and Spotify. Social media-wise, she is on YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. So do please follow, subscribe, like, comment, etc. Anaheim, Laguna Beach, San Juan Capistrano, Lola will be performing in all those cities this and next month. Keep up with her online, including through Bands in Town, for details on where and when you can go see her perform live. Do please tell her that you heard her and her music on Now Hear This Entertainment. I really appreciate you tuning in to the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you're still with us at the end of the episode, I'm guessing you are enjoying what you're hearing, so thank you for sticking around. If you would like to show your appreciation for the work I put into making this show happen week after week, year after year, 11 years with no breaks, I've got an easy way for you to do so. Head over to nhte.net, where you will spot a bright yellow Buy Me a Coffee button. It's not a sponsor, and there's no brand behind it. It's simply a way for you to send a little support my way with a personal message that I will see. Alternatively, you can go directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. Your support means the world to me, and I thank you in advance. That's going to do it for episode 577. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Lola Christine. This is the one she just talked about. It's called Other Side.
Meet me on the other side, somewhere between what is wrong and right, finding the meaning in between the lines. It's a wanna get inside your soul.